Japanese low-cost carrier idiocy.
Okay.
By which I mean idiocy me, but...
So you did something stupid?
Well, I'm booking four of them right now.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. Well, Seth, you're booking some tickets right now, and there's some Japanese low-cost carriers that you're looking at?
Yeah, you know, I have a problem, and it's called travel. So let's just start with that. I'm scheduled to be on Delta's A350 inaugural next week. It's on Monday the 30th from Detroit to Tokyo Narita. And nice. Going to be flying in premium economy, going to give it a go, see how it is, have some fun. And the problem there is the have some fun part. I didn't want to just do a straight turn and come home.
Yeah.
Even though I need to be back like for the following Monday to go on a different trip to Asia and Hawaii. I decided that maybe I should have a little bit of fun while I'm in Japan, and I'm going to sort of taste test, as it were, several different low-cost carriers. And so I set myself a challenge to see if I could book an itinerary where I could mix and match a whole bunch of them for less than a couple hundred bucks and try to make something happen. And so I've managed to put together Vanilla Air, Peach Airlines, so what are the other ones? Air Asia just relaunched its Japan subsidiary.
Where are you? Oh, they have a subsidiary in Japan. I thought you were saying you were flying them out of Japan.
No, and the fourth one I got is Jetstar Japan. And what's funny to me, in many ways, Vanilla used to be AirAsia.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah, and they like gave up on me neither until I started doing some research today. They gave up on it, sort of threw it away, and now it's coming back.
Well, I mean, with Vanilla and Peach, I mean, it sounds like you have some flavors.
Yeah. Put it together a nice ice cream sundae. And an AirAsia cherry on top. I don't know. It's bright red. But it's interesting. It's been challenging to try to figure out how to put it all together and whatnot. And there's a couple other LCCs I missed, but I'm basically going to fly from Narita to Osaka.
Okay.
As soon as I land, Kansai Kix, KIX airport, overnight there. And I'm just going to stay out at the airport. They have, I think we've talked about these in the past, the first class pod hotels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the airport themed ones. So there's one at the airport there now. I don't even have to leave the property.
Oh, nice.
Which is good because I'll be jet lagged and don't land till like 9:30 at night. And then 8:30 the next morning, I'm flying Peach to, I always say this wrong because I never remember all the right words in it. Fukuoka.
Yeah.
F-U-K. I'm going to spend a day there. I get in around just before 10 and I don't leave until 4:30. So I'll spend my day touristing there. And apparently the airport is very close to town and easy metro transit and all that other sort of fun stuff. So I get to do that for a few hours and then fly from there on Jetstar or Star Flyer. I have my choice there. Up to Nagoya. I actually may do Star Flyer for two reasons. One, it's a little later in the day, so it gives me more time to be a tourist. And B, Jetstar is sort of Jetstar the same everywhere.
Yeah.
I feel like. And, you know, yes, it's Jetstar Japan, but if I'm going to do it, I may as well get an airline that really only flies within Japan. So I'm probably going to switch to Star Flyer for that. I got to check the prices. I think they're similar.
Isn't Star Flyer the one that ANA uses for some of their carriers? Or is that the Star Flyer is the all black? Their planes are painted all black.
Star Flyer is the all black one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
And are you thinking of Skymark?
It might be Skymark. Yeah, that I'm thinking.
So ANA bought Skymark. And Skymark used to be a Delta partner. That was the one that Delta tried to buy at one point, and there was all sorts of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
Basically, everybody wanted it for Haneda slots. And that's why it was also the airline that ordered A380s that ANA has to take delivery of. Yeah, Starflyer's the all-black one. So this Skymark is the other one. I didn't realize they're actually still in business, and I guess they're still running as a separate subsidiary. Huh. I thought ANA had fully folded them in. But so I overnight in Nagoya, and then in the following morning, an early flight Nagoya to Sapporo on AirAsia Japan. And yes, same AirAsia as everywhere else, but it's just literally just went back into business. I think they just started selling tickets last week or the week before. So, and it's flight number one for them. So I'm excited by that, which is completely irrational, but here I am. I think once I get to Sapporo, it's either Skymark or AirDo. or Airdo, I'm not actually sure how to pronounce that one, that I didn't know existed until Skyscanner told me it did. and it's interesting, a bunch of these little airlines have fares that are specific for visitors. So if you can show a foreign passport and your arrival or departure tickets, like to and from Japan, you actually get way cheaper fares. And Airdo is one of them, or Airdo, I don't know how we're going to pronounce it. But the flight that works, that has the fare available, is a 55-minute unprotected connection inbound from AirAsia. And I feel like that's risky.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the connection situation is in Sapporo. So it was that. Skymark has better timed flights, but it's $200. And I don't like that either because I'm cheap. And so what I'm actually going to end up doing is there's a Delta fare that uses ANA as the connecting flight.
Something we talked about before.
Yeah, weird partnerships that fill those out. So, well, remember, Delta used to have Skymark as its connection, and it's a little surprising to me that they only use, you know, quote unquote, real ANA flights and not Skymark anymore for this feed. But so, yeah, I'll do Sapporo, Haneda, Minneapolis, and I think JFK is where I finish.
Haneda, Minneapolis is a nice line. And are they? Are you going to be in premium economy on that one, or
no? That one, I'm buying that one separately. Mm. So the other ticket was bought for me, not by Delta, but I'm doing it with Airways and, you know, doing some coverage for them. So I've got that ticket, and that was specifically to try out premium economy.
Yep.
Also, it's only on the 350s, and Minneapolis to Haneda gets the 777. So there's no premium economy. There's Comfort Plus if you pay up for the extra legroom or whatever, but it's not the same thing. So I'm just going to do that in coach and hope for light loads, I guess.
Yeah. So my question about the low cost carriers in Japan is, are they cheaper than say ANA and JAL by a significant margin?
Yes.
And how do you think they're doing that? Because they're also competing with high speed rail, right? In most of Japan.
They are. And well, first off, how they're doing that, high speed rail is not cheap in Japan.
Yeah, exactly.
At all.
Yeah.
So that's part of how they're doing. I was looking at options originally, like just to take the train to Nagoya when I landed, because this all started with AirAsia has Nagoya to Sapporo as its only route right now, AirAsia Japan. So, and Sapporo is not sufficiently close to be able to train to. It's way up in the north. So I had to, you know, that was going to be a flight either way. So I looked at maybe I'll just arrive and then sit on a train because that's nice and relaxing from Narita. And you have to go all the way into town, then transfer, and you can get on the Shinkansen at that point. But that was like $150.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I'm getting that ticket for $38.
Wow.
On vanilla. So, yeah, it's way cheaper. How are they doing it? Like low-cost carriers the world over, I assume they're losing a little bit on every transaction and making it up on volume.
and so then how hard is it to buy tickets on some of these carriers? I mean, I know that I've looked at buying tickets on, you know, carriers in Southeast Asia and even Korea, South Korea, and it's not necessarily easy to buy a ticket.
Yeah, they all have U.S. or English websites so far. Using Skyscanner helps dramatically. I like it just as a good sort of meta search engine in general. It's actually giving me some random OTA in the United States that's underpricing everything, and I can't figure that out, but I'm buying it because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I'm hoping tickets actually get issued. It does mean things like no seat selection and in advance and stuff, so I'm picking and choosing how much I'm willing to save versus other bits.
Yep.
But, you know, for the vanilla air flight at night, I'm a window seat guy, but I don't care nearly as much because it's, you know, at night. And I'll take my chances on that. The other ones during the day, I'll probably pay up a little extra to get window seats where I can.
Yep.
And or even the extra legroom seats. Like I know, which one was it? Vanilla was only 1,000 yen, which is like $10, $9 surcharged for extra legroom seat to get exit row.
Yeah,
so,
seems nice. Especially if you get
like
the window.
Yeah, so window, exit row, like a window was $5, exit row, window was $10. Why, yes, I will take that. all of them have very strict baggage limits.
Mm-hmm.
7 kilos carry-on.
So by weight, not by size necessarily.
Yeah, well, there's size also, but I will be hit by the 7 kilo risk there. And I'm going to try to do this whole trip in one bag under 7 kilos.
No way, man.
Why not?
That is, does it, I mean, I guess it is, you're only there for a short time. It's 15 pounds. So I guess it's doable.
Sure. And if I bring, instead of one of my heavy padded backpacks, I'll bring a light backpack.
Yep.
Wear a pair of jeans, pack a spare pair of jeans, couple clean t-shirts, couple pairs of clean underwear, couple pairs of socks.
And you have to add your laptop and other things to that, right? Like chargers.
Yep, I'll have a camera and some chargers with me. And my laptop is a Surface Pro, so it's pretty light. I think I'll pull it off.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Worst case scenario, I like start moving, you know, one or two things into the pockets of my fleece.
Yeah, you know, you just need to take your klepto jacket.
Yeah, I got to check the weather. Yes, I have the what is that? That's Scotty vest.
The Scotty vest. Yeah, I call it the klepto jacket because you can carry.
Oh
everything.
Yeah, no, I've carried a full like everything. I have literally carried everything in that jacket before. But
it's not a carry on.
If it gets, you know what? Funny you should mention that. Just completely derailing everything. So I was down in Florida for the last couple of weeks doing the stuff with Spirit Airlines and Puerto Rico Carelift and getting that stuff all packed away. And Spirit hooked me up with a flight home.
Yeah.
Very nice of them. Got on board. The dude walks on like halfway through boarding wearing a full like climbing harness, like the full rig, like a window washer kind of thing. And best I can figure, it was to save weight in his carry-on or checked bag. But, you know, I don't believe anyone went DB Cooper on the plane. I didn't feel depressurization. And I was gone by the time he was sitting in the back, further back than us. So I was gone by the time he got off the plane. But
that's hilarious.
Absolutely wearing the full rig, like the big metal clasps and everything. And I was just like, it was very amusing.
All righty. So you're actually spending time in not Sapporo, but in
Nagoya. The tourist time I have, so I'm going to overnight in Osaka, but that's barely, and it's just at the airport. I've got 8-ish hours in Fukuoka, and then another short overnight in Nagoya.
Okay. Have you been to any of these before? I mean, I think you've been to Osaka, you told me.
I've been to Osaka, sort of. We flew out of Osaka, but we stayed in Kyoto.
Mm-hmm.
They're close to each other, relatively speaking. So that was, I wouldn't say I've actually visited Osaka, and I won't say that I have on this one either, other than that I'm going to stay in the airport for a couple hours.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be one where, like, I will find food at the airport somewhere before leaving security, I think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the big tourist part of the trip will be Fukuoka, and then I imagine I'll stay pretty close to the airport in Nagoya for a 7:30 a.m. departure.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
If there's a hotel on property, I'll probably try for that if it's affordable.
Yeah, you might even see some of the Dreamlifters out there. I think Nagoya is where, you know, Boeing gets a lot of parts for the 787s and stuff.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right. That'll be fun.
Yeah, you'll probably get some good spotting out there.
It'll be, you know, dark while I'm there, but other than that.
Well, you might have the spotting deck in the morning. I'm pretty sure most of those airports, most Japanese airports have a spotting, you know.
Yeah, but it'll be like 6:30 a.m. So.
Details, Seth.
Just saying, I freaked me out in Toulouse this week. 7:30 rolls around and it's still dark outside.
Yeah, it's been hitting me because it's starting to be winter here. So.
Yeah, and I know it's supposed to be that, but it was also warm and pleasant, so I'm having reconciling that.
Let's talk speaking of Toulouse, the A330neo, you know, we had asked, Foz and I had actually recorded a show while you were in Toulouse, and you recorded a show while you were in Toulouse, and, we had
bonus content, man, bonus
yeah.
content.
Well, we had some issues with our recording and, you know, as is typical with us, so,
No, yours is getting published soon, don't worry.
Okay. Well, and so we asked some questions on that show about the A330neo and kind of where things were going if airlines like Hawaiian choose not to go with it or change their orders to A350s.
Yeah, and I asked that question of a few people there and asked it a few times. The most coherent response I got was from Crawford Hamilton. So he's head of A330 marketing for Airbus. And his answer was a couple things. I specifically asked about the Dash 800 because right now Hawaiian is the only order, and that's the equivalent of the Dash 200s. And his answer was essentially, not even essentially, quote, it's a no-brainer, end quote. And that's in large part based on the fact that the Dash 800 and Dash 900 are 99% the same parts.
And just length is the difference?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they take a couple extra fuselage sections out, and all of a sudden you've got the smaller plane.
Yep.
So that's a big part of why they're not too concerned about, you know, they don't see it as a risky development. It's not that expensive to do it. The other thing that he said is that they've sold a whole bunch of the Dash 200s in the past. So he's pretty confident that they'll come along, you know, people will come along needing replacements, with the caveat that that's going to be a few years out.
Hmm. So they're willing to keep the A330neo line open in the hopes of these other carriers needing a replacement plane.
Right. And, you know, the 900, which is the equivalent of the 300, is the longer plane, the larger plane. So the lower CASM, lower costs per seat mile. And that's what airlines look at a lot. And that takes the risk that you can actually fill all those seats. When you start looking at the LCCs, and especially long haul LCCs, they seem to do pretty well at filling the seats. It's unclear that they're charging enough money to do that, to be profitable, but filling the seats, at least this far, hasn't been a problem. So they want to do that on the lower costs. So you get a, you know, Norwegian switched from the Dash 8 to the Dash 9 on most of its 787s going forward. Most airlines seem to be sort of inching larger across the board. And so Boeing's Dash 8 isn't selling as much. The Dash 800 isn't selling as much for the 330s. Even on the 737 MAX and the A320neos, the MAX 7 didn't really sell. The 319neo didn't really sell. I saw the 319, by the way, in Toulouse at Taxi Buy at one point. It was pretty cool. you know, there seems to be, and this goes back to our conversation we've had about the C-Series as well a lot, and I know you guys had that in the episode I wasn't on, because I actually had to listen to it this time to edit it. But, you know, there was that same idea of the upgauging, and everybody seems to be buying slightly larger planes right now.
Yep.
And I know Foz sees some risk there. I see similar, but not quite the same as he does on that front. And I just think, you know, especially when you're buying such a large plane, the risk of not filling those last 30 to 40 seats versus coming up with a better way to sell them, or rearranging your plane and putting in premium economy.
Mm. Yep.
Right. I mean, that's, say you can only sell 220 seats instead of 250, but you put premium economy in, you can sell 20 of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that takes up the extra, you know, three rows of space that you otherwise would have had to sell in economy, and you actually sell it at a better margin. So it does change the sort of landscape and the economics of how these planes operate these days. But overall, you know, I think there is a market for the larger planes versus the smaller ones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe the smaller ones come into play too. Airbus will tell you, and Boeing will tell you, that the MAX 7 and the 319neo still are real. And that they think people are going to buy them. There are a lot of 737-700s and 319s flying today. It's unclear just how many of them will actually be replaced one for one.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this kind of leads into the other topic we were going to talk about, which is Boeing possibly reopening the 767 line at the behest of United.
So the line is still open today. It'd be restarting passenger versions.
They still make
freight planes.
Freight planes, and they make the naval refuelers and Air Force refuelers.
Right. So those are all based, yeah.
The same base model.
Yeah, the refueling is based on a 767, and the freighters are 767s, you know, without windows punched in, window holes punched in. And so, yes, the line never went dark, and I think that's one of the reasons it's easier to bring that back versus the theoretical restarting a 757 line. The tooling is already all there.
Yeah.
And so the rumor is United, or a large airline, presumably United, wants 50 to 100 763s. And it's unclear much beyond that, but the goal would be to go from, they want to basically double production by mid 2021, I think, ramping up starting in 2019, 2020-ish.
Yep.
And so, if you look at the math on that, you know, so 2 years away, they have to be really ramping up to start doing deliveries and new deliveries at the beginning of 2020. And you end up with, you know, United having a whole bunch of 763s and 752s that need to be retired. It lines up.
Yep.
It's a crazy, crazy situation to me.
Well, I mean, and we, you know, we kind of talked offline about this, about how, well, why wouldn't United just pick up 788s? And I think there's 40 fewer seats on the Polaris configured 763s as compared to the 788s. So, you get the premium cabin with 40 fewer seats And you still get a decent range. You can do Chicago, you can do Houston, and all the East Coast to Europe in a two cabin config. Or I guess three cabin config with Economy Plus, but without the cost. And for me, it's a better passenger experience on the 767s.
Yeah, I think. Well, it depends. Are you in coach or are you in business?
Well, I think. I think in coach, it's definitely a better passenger experience. 232.
On the 7.6.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
In business, I would take, I'm assuming, the Polaris seat, and even without, I don't mind the 222 layout. We've talked about this before, and I may be broken there, but I don't mind it.
Nope.
I think the value proposition of the higher humidity and the lower cabin pressure and all those things, air pressure, whatnot, a lower altitude, higher pressure, is real.
Yeah.
So I do like that. Whether it's worth it or not is hard to say. I mean, to me, the other things to look at is when, 5 years ago when they were both for sale, a 787 cost $50 million more than a 767.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all newer stuff. I mean, the composite costs more than the metal and all those things, and it's a fancy new airplane. So it should, it's going to be more expensive, but then Boeing potentially loses 787 sales, and the 787 product line still isn't profitable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, there's,
I feel like you're like sort of, making good sales on the cheap stuff and losing out on your premium product and hoping, I guess, later that you get to sell a premium product, but it's unclear that airlines really have that much loyalty.
True. And now they know what it feels like to be us. But at the same time, I think, Boeing has the 787-9 line that is selling. It's still not profitable, but there are more airlines picking them up, right? I mean, Qantas is picking them up now. Singapore is going to take the 1000s. United's supposed to take the 1000s, right? Or the dash 10s, I should say. That's what I meant. So I think there's still that market there. But again, profitability is the real question, and we won't know that for another 10 years probably.
Yeah. And it's so strange to me. And right. I mean, putting aside the CapEx thing, there's then the operational costs, and the 787 and the 350 sold real big when fuel was triple the price it is now, double the price it is now.
Yeah. Well, and Foz actually brought up something interesting, because you can actually – those Rolls-Royce engines that are on United 752s, the old Continental planes, they still have a lot of life in them. And those engines do fit on 767-300s. So United could save some even more cash by refitting or just giving the engines to Boeing to fit onto the planes they're buying.
Yeah, that's Or keep them as spares or whatever. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, keep them as spares. I mean, because they do have a lot. I mean, their lifetime is much longer than the actual airframe lifetime.
At this point.
Yeah, exactly. So, and those 752s are going to be nearing end of life by 2021.
Yeah. It's a real strange thing.
Yeah, I think if they said they wanted 50 of them, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of planes. And does Boeing think that by 2021 they'll have them all delivered?
Would be starting in 2020. Deliveries over like 3 years.
Okay, all right, interesting.
But the important thing there is if it's a 763, it's the same. It's easy to work them into an existing fleet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like taking the 77Ws where they very quickly needed 15 of them all at once. 14 to like establish operations reliably.
Yeah, you're taking one out of service, putting the other one in, and it's just it's like a hot swap, no big deal.
Yeah. Or even, slightly growing and then, grow it during the summer and then shrink back down in the winters and sort of incremental it, sort of step changes and see which ones work and don't and whatever. I mean, United has invested and continues to invest a significant amount of money trying to get those 763s more reliable, but it just doesn't seem to be taking.
Yeah, I think you just need new planes. And so that's part of it. So,
yeah.
And on top of this, they had their earnings call, and there was some, I know you haven't listened to it yet, and so we won't talk too much about it, but there was two things I think that stood out to me. One, Kirby acknowledged that basic economy sales have not brought the ancillary revenue numbers that they thought it would still. And the, that, you know, he got a lot of pushback on the idea that United is selling miles while at the same time devaluing their award chart, and how much more can they push that without, you know, irritating customers. Both of those points, I think, are very interesting points.
Yes. Yes, they are. I am less concerned about the devaluing the award chart side of things. I'm sure that many of our listeners disagree, but I think there's a long way yet to go before people really start to give up on the miles as an either an incremental or a draw and a partner thing. I think the culture has been, the U.S. sort of retail culture has been so transformed by that in recent years that it's going to take a long time for that to fall apart, and I'm not sure it ever will.
Yeah, yeah.
There obviously there's ways it can happen, and if it goes straight retail at too low a value, especially on the air side, it could. But even programs that have, you know, the less than 1% value proposition through bonuses and various other things continue to be a good incremental play.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And most consumers are not willing to get 10 different credit cards and try to remember which one to use when and where. So maybe it's not quite as lucrative, but I don't see the bottom falling out there anytime soon. So that's part of it. What was the other half of the people's complaint?
The basic economy
and the incremental revenues. Yeah, they did have to give up a big part of what Kirby wanted to happen with basic economy. He wanted to sell it up to, you know, B fares.
Yeah,
and didn't, and the others didn't follow. This sort of goes back though to the, you know, we're going to get our natural share, quote unquote, of customers back.
Mm.
And every time they say that, I sort of throw up in my mouth a little bit, because there's this assumption that United is due some percentage of the market. And the reality is United is due what it can actually attract passengers to buy. And that's often seems to be less than what they want right now. But maybe it's time to look at what you're selling and how you're selling it, rather than just blaming, you know, other people for stealing your customers.
Yeah.
Perhaps you're giving them away or pushing them away.
Yep. That can't, but that can't be it, Seth. That can't be
no?
it. No? No, no. It's gotta be, it's the customer's fault. We're not, it's not getting our
or someone else's, or anyone else's fault.
But our own. Yeah, 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 yeah. Two more topics for you. So LaGuardia is having a shuffle of gates. It sounds like Delta's moving, American's moving, and JetBlue, right? I mean, JetBlue, I think you posted on Twitter, is going to move to the Marine Air Terminal.
Yeah. So JetBlue is moving to Marine Air Terminal. Someone else was, I think Alaska was going there too.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah.
I'll try to pull up. I saw a tweet about that at some point. Yeah, I'm happy and sad on that. I'm happy because I like the Marine Air Terminal and I like flying United. Oh, excuse me. God, that was a weird slip. I like flying JetBlue. I like flying United too. I don't nearly hate them as much as everybody else does. Yeah, here's the switches. I got the details here. American goes from a split at the Central Terminal and Terminal C, where US Air used to be. They consolidate to Terminal B, the Central Terminal building.
Okay.
As does, this is called American Shuttle, but the express flights move over. Delta moves out of the Marine Air Terminal to C, taking over the gates that American gave up. Oh God, this is going to be awful. JetBlue moves from Central Terminal to Marine Air. Alaska moves from Central Terminal to Marine Air. Although, remember, Alaska doesn't have many flights. It's a few a day to Dallas, I think, is all they have right now.
Yep. Yep.
On E-75s, if I remember correctly. Frontier will have departures out of C and arrivals into D.
What?
And Spirit will have departures out of C and arrivals into D. I don't know if, and that's what I'm reading here, from Flight Global. I'm not sure if that's just baggage claim versus check-in counters.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that whole complex is all connected, and I can't imagine they'll, like, tow the planes back and forth on a, you know, 60-minute turn or whatever. But that's the situation that's going on. And then, yeah.
And does United stay in the Central Concourse?
Yeah, United keeps its sea gates in the Central Terminal building.
So I'm wondering, like, I wonder why American went with the Central Terminal building instead of staying where they were at the U.S. air gates. Because that area was, I think the U.S. air gates area is much nicer.
Way nicer, yeah. Of course, but it's only like 3 or 4 gates left over there and a dozen or so in the Central Terminal building.
True, yeah.
And they need, and it may be even more than that with all this, when all is said and done, and they need the space.
Yeah. And Delta's not, I mean, they're not growing at LaGuardia nearly as much as American has.
Since when? Remember, Delta and U.S. Airways traded all those slots.
No, it's true.
And that's why Delta's at C&D now, because U.S. Airways walked away from a shit ton of capacity there and traded it to get it at Reagan.
Yep.
So National, whatever you want to call it, DCA. There you go. I think that no one is growing at LaGuardia because you can't grow there. Eventually what you can grow is by upgauging, and Delta had announced plans to upgauge by installing or implementing or using C-Series at LaGuardia. That was going to be one of the bases.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're waiting to see when those C-Series will actually be delivered because of the tariffs and now the Airbus thing.
Yep.
But it's gonna not, you know, you can put in larger planes. That's a challenge. You know, you get stuck in a gate hold area that was designed for a 70 seater and you put a plane that's got 110 in. And that's 40 more people that you have to sit in the same insufficient number of seats.
Yep, that's true.
And you pretty much end up with a Toulouse airport situation where there were no seats in the gate area at all.
Yeah.
And I was so confused. Literally, it's like just 50 people, 80 people standing around waiting to board a plane because there were no seats available.
And, I mean, that's what the central terminal feels like at times, even with – I mean,
super crowded.
Yeah, you feel like – I mean, especially the United gates where you're flying mainline, and then American was flying, you know, CR-7s in there and – there's nowhere to sit. You just stand because it just feels claustrophobic.
Yeah. And I'm just reading this now. It looks like American is actually going to have gates in all four piers of the central terminal building.
And they're going to use a bus to get people back and forth?
Looks like it.
What a pain.
I mean, so like the good news, it's going to be better for American because you don't have to go all the way across the field to the other terminal.
True.
The bad news is it's still split security.
Yeah. Yeah, the split security, they only have an Admiral's Club on one finger.
The deep here, yeah.
Yep, and yeah. At least it's behind security, isn't it?
Yes, the Admiral's Club is inside security.
Yeah, and unlike United.
Yeah, United, Air Canada, and Amex are all outside security in the central terminal building.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting shift, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest complaint or concern is that I take mass transit to and from the airport, and the bus doesn't go to the Marine Air Terminal.
And so how would you get over there? You have to get off and take a cab?
The express bus, the Q70, mm-hmm. the express designated for LaGuardia from Jackson Heights Roosevelt Avenue, doesn't go there. I think there's a Q47 that does, and it's not that bad, but it doesn't just run up the BQE and go across. It actually sort of rolls through town to get there.
Yeah, so depending on traffic and everything, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it can add a little bit of time.
Yeah.
One thing a buddy of mine actually ran into at the bagel shop today mentioned to me is that he finds that, like, Lyft Line or Uber Pool is usually $6 to $8 from there to the Marine Air Terminal, from Jackson Heights Roosevelt Avenue to the Marine Air Terminal.
Hmm.
So, and it's just a driver. So it's pretty quick and pretty cheap, relatively speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you have is take the train to get 90% of the way there, and then, you know, pay the extra $10 to get the last part quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's another option.
When does all this shifting take place?
December 9th.
Oh, wow, soon.
So very soon. Very soon. Other fun fact, according to JetBlue, Delta and American and the Port Authority are paying for all these moves.
Interesting.
And it doesn't surprise me that Delta would want to pay for it. Delta's been wanting to get... For years now, Delta's been wanting to move its shuttle out of Marine Air Terminal,
mm-hmm.
Which as a customer, I think stinks. I love the Marine Air Terminal. I think it can be a great opportunity. As a airline, I understand why they don't like split operations.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So I get it. Expect OTG food. From what I can tell, let's just say that it has been heavily hinted at that the retrofit for the Marine Air Terminal will include the OTG experience.
Yeah. Well, I guess that makes sense with JetBlue. I mean, they have it at JFK, yeah. Too. So.
Yeah, and a few other places, I think. So.
Lastly, Etihad is being sued by Air Berlin. We just never – I mean, even though Air Berlin sounds like it's dying, I mean, it's using its dying breath to sue somebody, which
– Well, it's suing somebody and, like, losing airplanes. Don't forget that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they're suing Etihad because they say Etihad has set them up to be insolvent. Like, they let them become insolvent.
But didn't you say it's only for, like, $8 million?
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like, hey, Darren, we're suing for $8 million to stay afloat for an extra day.
A half hour? the losing the airplane thing I find is hysterical. They flew into Keflavik in Iceland this past Saturday, Friday night, I think. And the Icelandic Airport Authority impounded the plane.
Oh, that's awesome.
For failure to pay previous debts. They apparently, prior to August, when they declared insolvency, they had accrued a certain amount of debt for landing fees and such, and hadn't been paying. And knowing that the airline is basically done now, and this is its last week of operations, the Iceland Airport Authority kept the plane.
They're going to get their money, man.
I mean, this is how that sort of thing works. I get it. But yeah, that's what's going on there.
That's kind of amazing. Funny. That is funny. Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to get any. They probably won't win the suit either, I don't think. So,
even if they do, it doesn't matter.
I think Etihad's like, here, just take the $9 million and leave us alone.
Yeah, well. And either way, but they're still going to stop flying at the end of the week.
So. Yeah. Oh, man. Anything else?
No, I'm looking at all my other crap. I got to go finish booking all these tickets.
Yeah. And when do you leave? Tomorrow?
I'm going to Europe. The week that this episode comes out, I've been in Europe all week for an IATA conference, and then I'm home for a couple of days, and then I'm going on the trip. The Delta and Japan trip starts October 30th.
October 30th. Oh, right before Halloween, huh?
So next Monday. I will be dressing up for Halloween at the airport in Osaka, I suppose. As a jet-lagged business traveler.
Hawaiian shirt, at least?
I was thinking I was probably going to wear I have a red one.
Mm-hmm.
It's close enough to the Delta red that I think I can pull it off.
Nice. I like it. Well,
I got to save the fancy blue one for the actual United retirement, 747 retirement flight. I feel like it was originally acquired as an homage to the Hawaii flights of Continental and United back in the day. And there's no reason not to pay it forward, play that forward and whatnot and use it for that at the last flight there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, you're going to be in San Francisco, the display that they have set up, between, the 80 gates back to like the low 60s, that where the two moving walkways are.
Yeah. They always like that little museum section where the rubber walkways are.
Yeah. They've added
good stuff there.
Yeah. They've added some new stuff. It's great. I didn't have a ton of time to stop and look, but, just like old dinnerware and.
You had plenty of time. Your flight was canceled like three times.
Yeah. But by that point, I was, And last night I was really delayed, so I was running from one gate to the other, and I passed by it, and I was like, oh man, they got dinnerware and seats and all kinds of stuff. So definitely stop by. Yeah. If you have
some time. I love the museum stuff San Francisco does. Yeah. I really do. It's amazing.
It's great.
Every time.
Yep. Well, I think that's it for this episode. Our listeners can find us at moredotsmorelines.com, at dotslines on Twitter. Thanks for listening and happy travels. Bye bye.
Take care.